If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, the hauntings of the Yorktown Memorial Hospital. A conversation with owner Joanne Marks and Fred and Steven of Curious Twins Paranormal. Built in 1951 and managed by the Felician sisters, Yorktown Memorial Hospital in Yorktown, Texas, has become notorious for its chilling past. Originally serving the community as a healthcare facility, this 30,000-square-foot building saw an unsettling high number of deaths during its years in operation, some say as high as 2,000. After its closure as a hospital in 1986, it reopened briefly as a drug rehabilitation center, only deepening its disturbing reputation. Today, the abandoned corridors echo with the footsteps of restless spirits, from a playful young girl named Stacy to the Felician nuns themselves. Paranormal investigators have encountered eerie shadows, chilling screams, and vivid EVPs, drawing them deeper into the hospital's haunted legacy. Today on The Grave Talks, the hauntings of the Yorktown Memorial Hospital, a conversation with owner Joanne Marks and Fred and Steven of Curious Twins Paranormal. So I'm really excited today to talk about the Yorktown Memorial Hospital. And joining me today, we've got Joanne Marks. Now, Joanne, you are the owner of the Yorktown Memorial Hospital?
Yes, that's correct.
And you also own some other locations, including the Black Swan Inn?
Yes, Victoria's Black Swan Inn in San Antonio.
Which looks so interesting. Like, that's, I would love to talk about that location in another
anytime.
Episode, if you would be up to that.
Sure, anytime.
And also, we have got, joining us today, the Curious Twins, Fred and Steven. And tell me a little about you guys, the Curious Twins Paranormal.
Yeah, so we are a tour company primarily here in San Antonio. And what we do is we take people to haunted locations and we create like kind of environments for people to get their feet wet with the paranormal and do a little bit of ghost hunting, where we facilitate kind of large scale experiments with the paranormal. And then we also allow for people to have some independent and private time while we investigate places. And of course, you know, one of our most favorite locations is Yorktown Memorial Hospital. It's one of our kind of our premier locations because it's just an amazing place to take folks and to see their reactions and also hear about their experiences.
How did the two of you get started in doing this? Was paranormal something you were interested in as kids? And are you twins?
Okay, I'll start. This is Steven.
Hi, Steven.
So I'll answer the second question. We are not twins. We're actually a married couple, but we named the company because my mom is a twin and his mom also happens to be a twin as well. So it's in honor of our mothers.
Oh, I love that. And
yeah. And as far as like, you know, curious twins, we always thought that curiosity was, you know, a good approach to the paranormal. And it's, you know, not scary. You know, we're all curious about certain things. And for us, when we first met, you know, that was something that we had mutual interests, that we were both into the paranormal, but also really into history. And whenever we would travel together, we would go and do a ghost tour and, you know, go to the spooky places, visit the cemeteries. And eventually, you know, it came time when we thought we could do this ourselves. As far as, you know, when the paranormal came into my personal life, I have always really been into spooky things. And I think that's because I'm the youngest of four boys and my older brothers were much older than me. And they would always scare me. They would always jump out of closets and tell me ghost stories. And eventually I wanted to just conquer my fears. And I started consuming gothic novels and horror movies. And so the paranormal was always something that I was really into, but I never experienced anything concrete until I met Fred. So I'll go ahead and hand it over to him to share a little bit about.
Oh, now I'm really intrigued.
Yeah. So I grew up with kind of from a very early age, probably, you know, like 3 and a half, having kind of a very odd experience where, you know, I just kind of woke up from a dream and knew that my great grandmother was going to die on a certain date. And I told my family, and they thought that I was kind of crazy or like just a silly child. And then my grandmother, like my great grandmother, did die on that date. And it kind of just opened up my family to being a little bit curious. And my entire family had experiences as I was a kid growing up in the house that I lived in. And I think primarily it was because I was so curious about those things, and none of them were necessarily bad or evil or, you know, negative, but they were things that as a kid I didn't really quite understand. And so I have tried to make the paranormal more approachable in the work that we do. You know, like, I think, you know, I'm just kind of like a nerd that is just really trying to share what my interests are with people. And that's what kind of, you know, kind of how we're here.
I think that's kind of all of us, you know.
Yeah.
There's no big answer. We're all kind of searching for it. And I wish there would be. It's like, here's what's causing all of this stuff. That would be kind of awesome if we knew what was behind everything. But it's that curiosity and other people's stories, I think, are so fascinating because, you know, you've got the people who don't believe in any of this. They're like, yeah, don't believe in the paranormal. And then there's those of us who have had experiences that we can't explain. So I'm like, okay, maybe you don't believe in it because it's never happened to you. Now, Joanne, how did you end up with Yorktown Memorial Hospital?
It really started with the Black Swan Inn. I mean, I had been here and I've been involved with paranormal before paranormal became cool. And the biggest thing I always encountered was that all these research teams, these investigators, would collect all sorts of evidence, but they never archived and they didn't want to share. It was always their picture, their video, their EMF, whatever it was theirs, not necessarily the property that it was caught at. Mm. And so I thought it might be a good idea to create a library or a research institute if they would trust to download all of their information so we could archive and create a library of paranormal history, I guess. And in that, the research was, we were coming up with a name called SPIRIT, which was Scientific Paranormal Investigative Research Institute of Texas. And we were going to get the name secured downtown. And in doing so, Phil, my other half, so to speak, he was talking to this man at the courthouse and said, "Do you believe in ghosts?" And the guy's like, "No, but I have this hospital that, you know, I want to dump, I want to get rid of. It's supposed to be haunted." So we found out where it was and went down, drove down to Yorktown, like just a spur of the moment, went to check it out. And I'm like, this would be the perfect location to create our investigative research institute and create this library. And that's kind of how Yorktown became a part of the Black Swan Inn. It became our sister property. We ended up buying it, not really having had done any investigative work into it at all, other than it was a really interesting building, had some cool history. And so we jumped on the opportunity to buy it. And that's kind of how it got started.
That's so interesting. So were you able to basically collect the evidence in a centralized location? Has that worked out in the way that you were wanting it to?
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've been doing this long enough, you know that most teams don't like to share their evidence. They're very possessive of it, and they really don't comprehend that until it's archived, until, say, you're investigating Yorktown Hospital on December 2nd, you know, it's 1983, and you get a scream in the basement and you archive it. And then in 2004, somebody else is in the basement. Not only do they get a scream, but then they get communication, a conversation of sorts. If they archive it, they begin to build true historical evidence of the paranormal activity. Other than that, it's all just speculation. But again, most teams are very reluctant in sharing any of their evidence. They don't even want to share it with the property owners. And it's kind of a sad thing.
I didn't realize until several years ago, I don't do paranormal investigations myself, primarily because I'm too afraid. But because I grew up in a haunted house and I just don't want to live like that again. And
sure.
So, but I'm fascinated by it. Like, I'm super drawn to it and I love talking about it, which is why I love hosting the show. But I didn't realize just how much was not shared between the investigative groups. And to me, if you have a location, I think that is really interesting. For the example, just like you gave, you know, it could be something happened on that date and that same thing happened again to these people on the same date. And now you've got a little through line started.
Right. You start to really build an evidence archive.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the paranormal become more of a reality, especially for people who are skeptic of it. But unfortunately, you know, the paranormal field has become a really big field for entertainment purposes.
True.
And a lot of investigators, they want to be the next paranormal team on television. And so they try to hold on to everything and make it theirs without really seeing the bigger picture of how it all could work and should be working to make it more of a realistic scientific result versus just a hobby of collecting photographs or collecting recordings.
Mm-hmm. It would be nice to have all of that evidence. So when you work with Fred and Steven, I'm assuming you guys collect evidence. You've been there a number of times. You probably have access to that.
Right. Between us, we have a lot of documentation, which makes working with Fred and Steven great because not only are they really good storytellers, but they're great historians. They do all their research. If I bring something up, within 2 minutes, one of these guys is Googling to see if they can find the evidence and proof to either make me look stupid or to validate something that I'm saying, which is really a good thing because we don't have a problem questioning each other and challenging each other. And that's the thing that needs to happen within the paranormal world as a whole. It needs to be more of an open communication, a more of sharing of thoughts and ideas, and not it always being, well, I'm going to be the next star, and this is mm-hmm. the way we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with a lot of the big stars, and I've seen how things work for the entertainment side of it, too.
Sometimes I think, and we've all seen those YouTube videos in paranormal groups that are doing it for the scares and the thrills and not so much trying to find out what's behind the hauntings. And
right. A lot of them are very disrespectful. We had an encounter here last December when some of the YouTubers decided it would be really fun to just break into the house at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
No,
and they scaled the walls, kicked in the doors and videoed themselves breaking in. And they seem to forget that these locations are typically private property. They're not, you know, abandoned. Someone owns them. Someone's responsible for them. And they are extremely disrespectful at times with things like that. We deal with that a lot. Even when Fred and Steven are here on investigations and people will think that they should just be able to crash in and come in and check it out.
And they just film themselves committing a crime.
Right. They don't see it as a crime, though. Their biggest excuse, what they usually will say, well, we thought it was abandoned, even though there's lights on, cars in the parking lot, there's a dog, you know, there's furniture, there's power. And then they will eventually, well, we saw it on TV or we read about it in a book. So it's kind of a line. There's a fine line with real paranormal investigators and the respect that need to be given
yes.
to the living and the deceased. And then the YouTubers that just think it's, you know, it's a fun thing to do, to just go crash into properties without realizing that they could actually lose their lives doing things like that, especially in Texas.
It's like they could rent it. They could sign up to do
right.
an investigation. You know,
right.
you could
they
have
could
access
actually contact
to the building.
The property owner.
Yeah.
And ask for access. I mean, on that particular night, those guys were lucky that I didn't shoot them. It's like, I had a gun and told them I have a gun and they were like, well, freeze, it's dark and she can't see us. And I'm like, I don't have to see you. I can hear you. and I know how to shoot. You know, it's like, do you really want to lose your life by going into a property that you have not validated, you have permission to get into?
Wow. Wow. They're lucky that they got out of there, actually.
Yeah, they did go to jail.
Good.
Three out of nine, but
still,
yeah.
At least you got that.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that you have mentioned a couple of times that I really appreciate, and I'm a huge history buff, so no matter where I go, I want to know the history of the location, the history of the city, the history, I just think, adds to the information you gather. Especially if, you know, maybe you're doing an Estes method and you're getting a name, and then you find out this person was actually a patient there or something. So I find that really interesting. And one thing I found interesting about the Yorktown Memorial Hospital was that a lot of locations that we talk about were built in, you know, 1870, 1900. And this is much newer than what I kind of thought. When I first saw pictures of it, it's not, you know, like, it doesn't look necessarily as old. So I thought, that's interesting. And then when I dove in, I'm like, oh, this was built in the 50s.
Right. It was built by the Catholic Church for the Felician nuns. It was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's on, it's the halfway mark between the San Antonio Bay and San Antonio. It's on the old Indianola Trail. So it was very much a rural farm and ranch land out there. And evidently, based on some of its history and some of the people that I've encountered that actually were either born there or lived in the neighborhood, at that time, it was a pretty rough hospital at times. One of the doctors became known as the butcher. He would inadvertently, accidentally cut off somebody's leg, and it was the wrong leg due to a rattlesnake bite or something along those lines. He accidentally slit a man's throat by doing a surgery on the thyroid, and the gentleman died. And so there was a lot of trauma. Of course, labor and delivery for me in the hospital, it's a really hard area to go into. Mm. I often have gotten women screaming. You can hear babies crying. There is a room next to the delivery room that's called the cleanup room. And there is this toilet-like basin with a 6-inch drain in it. And it really bothers me because I'm like, what are they flushing that needed that size of a drain? So the hospital itself was pretty intense. It has a chapel. And really, the chapel is almost as big square footage wise as the whole hospital. So it's just a really, and the whole little town, all of Yorktown, if you ever get to travel through, all of Yorktown is a very intense energy center. There are several churches there. It's a very small community. I don't even think there's, not even 3,000 people?
Mm-mm, yeah.
That live there. And there's at least 5 or 6 churches. It has a lot of history too, just the little town.
Were there other small communities around that? So the idea was, we put a hospital here, we can draw from this community, this one, this one, this one.
The main thing was that it was halfway mark between San Antonio and the Bay. And so a lot of cattle, there was a lot of activity being driven through there. As the smaller towns kind of developed around, the railroad had a big impact. And Cuero became the next, I guess, bigger community. And so they got a newer hospital. And the railroad kind of bypassed the Indianola Trail. So that main thoroughfare wasn't as, I guess, productive for the community as it had been. So Cuero took over the kind of the medical side of it all, which then eventually turned Yorktown Hospital into sort of a, I don't know, a lot of people call it an asylum, but it was more of a drug rehab, infirmary. It was kind of a catch-all. That was not necessarily medical as what you would think is first aid hospital, but more of a mental drug rehab catch-all facility.
So that was, it was a drug rehab into the late 80s?
Correct. And then it got shut down because the state finally shut it down. I guess there had been a lot of complaints about what was going on there, but some of the patients were actually getting out of the hospital area and causing chaos. And one of them went across the street to a feed store, and there was a physical altercation. And when that happened, shortly after that, the state finally shut the facility down, and that was just closed up.
So then it just sat there empty for all those years?
Yes, it just sat there empty for years. Until we found it and bought it.
Yeah, because who wants it? Because it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Because it's out
in the middle of nowhere.
I looked at a map, and it's like 75-ish miles from San Antonio.
Right. It's about an hour and 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes, and then about another hour and 30 minutes to the Gulf.
So it's out there in the middle of nowhere. What do you do with it at that point? Nothing.
Nothing. I mean, Yorktown became a big boom town for fracking for oil. So there was an interesting situation where the community were trying to shut us down. And they had the youngest city manager, I guess, in the state of Texas. And he was very connected with a man that was buying up all the properties. He kind of had some insider trading information, I guess. He tried really hard to shut us down. And inadvertently, he actually was involved in a very serious car accident. He had been to this gentleman's, one of his bars, and gotten drunk. And they had allowed him to drive. And on his way home, was involved in this car accident. The ambulance was called out, and I wasn't there to witness it, but supposedly the ambulance, after they found him and picked him up, had to stop in front of the hospital, which is where he died, on their way to their hospital in Cuero. And then there was a woman that went to the hospital and was saying, you know, it should be shut down, it should be torn down, we're being disrespectful, on and on and on and on. And then, like, she made this big tirade about tearing the building down, and a week or so later, she also died. So then after that, you know, the area is very superstitious, and perhaps they just need to leave the hospital alone. And they've pretty much just let us continue on sharing the property with people that are curious about, you know, the afterlife. And most of the people that go there are very respectful. You know, of course, there's always the ones just like here that want to break in and do some damage. But for the most part, the paranormal teams that go in really go in with the right mindset.
It's pretty creepy looking, too, on the inside. I saw some pictures. Did they kind of leave some things behind? Because when they shut it down, where are they going to take everything?
Yes, a lot of stuff was left behind. When we got it, we had got it from this guy from the courthouse, and he had taken some stuff out. But we're collectors of things. I'm involved with a lot of movie sets and things, rentals. And so we collect, and we put a bunch of stuff back in. We put the rooms, what we could, if we could find enough furniture to make one hospital room with its furniture the way that it looked. We have the gurney and the labor and delivery room. We have one in the operating room, the emergency room. So some of the things we were able to restage. The second floor has technically the third floor where the nuns lived. So we were able to put beds and recreate some of that space too. So it helps people visually be able to see a little bit of what it might have been like actually when it was operating as a hospital.
Now, when you bought it, Joanne, when you went there for the first time, did you know right away this place, there's something else here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, immediately. We went in and everything was boarded up and we had to climb through a window and it was really dark inside and it's easy to get lost in there and lose your equilibrium. It's very much like I don't know if you know M.C. Escher prints, but there's a point in the basement to where it looks like you can't tell which stairway is going up and which is what's coming down, like where you are. I walked head on into a steel door that was open because I was kind of losing my balance. There were voices. We could hear people talking. So it was pretty intense. In fact, I've been involved in the paranormal world for more than 30 plus years now. And even though I own Yorktown, some of my experience has been so intense that I really don't like to go back there. It's very energy draining.
So, Stephen, how did you feel the first time you went in there?
Yeah, I was, one, really excited to go to an abandoned building that I had permission to go in. You know?
I'm not going to get arrested.
You don't get a lot of offers of somebody like, would you like to go to my abandoned building that's been abandoned for about 30 years? So that in itself was really exciting. And the visual element of it definitely is kind of immersive. So you're in this abandoned building. You get to, you know, have it for, in the first time that we went, we brought a group with us as well. And so we were able to experience it for several hours on end. And I am not a person who sees things. I have not seen a full body apparition, but I have heard and I definitely get feelings. And the feeling of the hospital does tend to be very heavy. And now that Fred and I have been, you know, I can't even count how many times that we've been. We go several times a year. It has, like, it presents itself as it is alive. I almost feel like sometimes that we're there, it is very much heavy. And there are some times where the activity is light and it is positive. And it seems like people are having really positive spirit communication sessions. And then there's times where it's just really scary as well. So I don't think I realized that the first time that I went. I was more really, really stoked to experience the hospital. And I was just soaking it all in as much as I could.
And Fred, Joanne mentioned the doctor. And is that doctor, and I don't know if I'm going to say his last name correctly, Leon Norwirsky?
Norwirsky. Yeah, Dr. Leon Norwirsky. He was the physician that was kind of in the town and in the area, given that kind of nickname,
and
the butcher.
He practiced medicine into his 90s.
That's correct. Yeah, he actually kind of held a record for having, you know, one of the longest medical licenses in operation. And he really kind of primarily served that rural community through majority of his career.
I got to be honest, if I'm going to have surgery, I don't want it done by the doctor who's in his 90s. That doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah, for sure. And that's pretty much how, you know, Texas, you know, the medical association kind of rained down upon him, is that, you know, right after that thyroid incident that Joe mentioned, it got their attention to say, hey, you know, it's probably a good time for you to retire. And he did. He did retire shortly after, and he actually died the same year he retired.
Do you think that it was old age? Maybe he was suffering from a little forgetfulness, dementia, something. Do you think he was kind of a bad guy? Maybe he wasn't, you know, the kindest, most thoughtful guy?
Well, I don't think he was a murderer. I don't think he was that kind of a person.
Okay.
But I think he was a very stubborn man. And he was used to having things done his way. And I don't think his staff could easily question him from what I have kind of read and experienced. And I think that was kind of his downfall is, you know, when you are so stubborn, you have a whole team behind you willing to help you, and you're not listening to them and you're not letting them do their job, you know, it's likely that you're going to be making some mistakes. So I think, you know, his biggest thing is, you know, he's probably stubborn. Perhaps if he hadn't been so stubborn, he might have retired in the 70s.
I have an elderly mother, and I think a lot of people who are that age are very stubborn.
It's like,
you can't drive anymore, but I want to keep driving, but you can't.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, because I was like, he could be a rather dark energy that's still there, but, you know, maybe he's just still hanging about at the hospital.
Yeah, I definitely think that he is hanging about. And I think that there are people who died under his care. You know, there's a lot of deaths that happened in that hospital while it was in operation, kind of more than there should be. And I think those spirits are hanging around. I think those sometimes are confused, maybe even angry, and maybe even annoyed at times with some of the folks, not all of the folks that go in there. You know, like Joe said, not everyone goes in with respectful intentions. And so, you know, I think that that might be part of the hauntings and how they kind of come about.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Yorktown Memorial Hospital. For more information on the hospital, visit victoriasblackswaninn.com. For more information on Curious Twins Paranormal, visit curioustwins.com. You can also find them both on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.